private franchise operator to run what should be our publicly owned transport rail system. I don't think finding the money for 113 more frontline staff is very much to ask for at all. So we'll keep that campaign going. It'll point of victory. I suppose the only thing else I can say is that naturally I know we'll all be working hard to throw out Scott Morrison and this coalition government at this election and to keep the coalition out of office in Victoria here at the state election later on this year. But really, when you look at the federal Labor opposition at this time, what it's offering and so on, of course we want them to win, but when it often seems that even where there are good policies there, policies that would do something to help working people have a more secure job, to have a better standard of living, to support their families, their loved ones, to do something for those who are out of work, it often seems that federal Labor right now doesn't even know how to argue strongly and firmly and well enough for the good policies that it has. And really, when you look at the gamut of the platform and the policies that Anthony Albanese in the federal Labor Party are offering, it still feels well short of a kind of alternative that working people desperately need and are crying out for, and which would be popular. Something that really promises a complete and fundamental shift in the balance of wealth and power away from bosses and the rich and big business to in favour of working people and their families and their unions. We need, and we need to be fighting for the unfettered right to strike. That's the only thing that could even start to make our side in the struggle start to be level to the power that the bosses and the big corporations are able to level against us every day whenever they feel like it. We need to fight for the right for patent bargaining, for industrial bargaining, so that the benefits and the gains that a group of workers in one section or one industry win flow through to the rest of the industry as they rightly should. But we need to fight for the right to... Well, we need to turn the anti-secondary boycott laws of a Trade Practices Act into a dead letter. Basically, what that means is that when one group of workers go out on strike, a group of other workers who might be connected to what they do in the supply chain, say, let us say, for example, the truck drivers bringing the supplies in and out of, say, a warehouse where the workers have gone on strike, if they wanted to join them in solidarity strike action by refusing to handle or transport the goods coming in and out until those workers won their claim, that's barred by law. It's illegal under law. We need to turn that into a dead letter to even start to turn our trade unions back into a fighting movement again. And the only way we're really going to do that is to come together, work strategically, and turn those laws into a dead letter by deed, not waiting for some kind of legislation or some kind of action from government to do it. So, obviously, we know the federal election matters, but we know that even if the coalition are thrown out, we just cannot ever rely on a so-called strategy, or it's a non-strategy, of enterprise bargaining unionism. We can't rely on a strategy of unionism that looks to just to the Fair Work Commission and trying to box clever and get some kind of better leverage out of a commission system. And we certainly can't rely on our trade union movement to just hand a blank check over to any federal Labor government and hope that they're going to come in and save us from the dreadful condition our movement is in. And we can't rely on the so-called style of trade unionism that that argues for that. And frankly, we need to cast aside the so-called trade unionists, so-called, who claim that workers and bosses have common interests and common ground between each other. Because look at the terrible place that's put our movement in now. We need to come together and think strategically about how we are going to fight, revive, how we are going to revive a strong, fighting and militant trade union movement where all workers are lifted up and are able to fight together, and we're able to start to fight to turn the balance of wealth and power in this country back around to our side again. It's the only way we're going to be looking towards some kind of humane and equal order in the world of things. At the same time, we also need to be looking ahead and fighting to scrap and pull Australia out of AUKUS, to withdraw from ANZUS, to close the US and foreign US military and surveillance bases on Australian soil, and end Australia's predatory relationship of domination and bullying over the workers and people of the Asia Pacific. And you look at the Solomon Islands and Security Pact they've just signed there with China, and you have politicians on both the government and on the Labor side waxing lyrical about how terrible it is that the Solomon government has done that. Well, it may be a bad thing, you know. I don't have any illusions at all about China, but you know what, Australia and the United States do the same thing of domineering and dominating all the time over those countries, dominating their local economy through multinationals, big capital, military, treating, taking democratic sovereignty away from those countries' people and their workers and independent trade unions. When we do it, it's normal, but when another side does it, it's outrageous. What utter hypocrisy that is. So we need to fight and resist the war drive that the Australian body politics is putting us on, and we need to fight and fight, not just as a project for the next term of federal politics, but for the next term of years, to repeal and force the exit of AUKUS from Australia and to take on and fight ANZUS as well. I think I've already said enough, but all I can say is that it's in workers' solidarity and their ability to come together and to actually act out and fight and not being afraid to strike and come out in solidarity with one another is the only thing that's made the difference in this struggle between being dominated and fighting back and winning and advancing the cause of equality and social justice. So thank you very much for your time and the privilege, comrades. And I look forward to seeing you on May Day this Sunday.
Thanks. Jack, second the resolution. I just call on Shane from the MUA to give a bit of a thumbnails report in relation to what the issues are confronting the MUA. And on Sunday, I'm sure you'll elaborate a lot further. So,
firstly, on behalf of the Maritime Union of Australia, I would also like to acknowledge the land upon the traditional owners of the land upon which we meet today, the Wurundjeri people of the Greater Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past and present, and also pay my respects to any First Nations people here today. I'd also like to acknowledge to Len and Spadey for the hard work they do putting these May Day events together, and to all the activists here today. Fantastic. The numbers seem to be lower than they have been for a while. I mean, we had COVID recently and stuff, but we'd like to see if we could build this up and over the course of time. Sensational, thank you for that. I'd also like to acknowledge our brothers and sisters and comrades that have gone before us over 160 years ago to put in place, you know, what we have now, what we're fighting for now. You know, those people, workers from the workers of the world that got this together all those years ago. With that too, I just want to read from the dedication I've got here from our union. In memory of our courageous labour movement activists that sacrificed for the momentous 8-hour day, we humbly lay this wreath in honour of your memory and legacy of solidarity for all future generations. To those who continue to struggle, we shall overcome, like our brothers and sisters before us. In solidarity, the Maritime Union of Australia Victoria Branch. Workers of the world, unite. Right, okay, our industry, goodness me, I could be here all day.
No, you haven't got that long.
I haven't, no. As you know, we cover only a handful of work sites or industries in our union. Divers, port workers, offshore and stuff. The two big ones being stevedoring and seafaring. I'll start with the seafaring. As you probably know, our history as an island nation, we had hundreds of ships plying the coast internationally and domestically, and over time that dwindled down until probably about 30 years ago we had about 80 vessels, Australian flag, Australian crew, and you introduced the Liberal government with their single voyage permits, all that sort of thing, and just their hardcore line of supporting big business, international business, and not supporting the people that they've been mandated to support is the people of Australia, the Australian workers, and of course the seafarers. We're down to about approximately 12 vessels, Australian flag and Australian crews. Six of them do the Bass Strait run, so we're in dire straits there. We need to get the Morrison government out because of this, because Albanese has pledged a strategic fleet for us, with I think about 12 ships straight up, and that will introduce in time more ships and possibly shipbuilding. In the middle of this, we have the dispute you may be aware of is the Svitzer dispute. Svitzer operate tugs around Australia. They employ about 1,000 Australians, so a big employer. But Svitzer is part of the bigger umbrella of Maersk, which is a Dutch company, a huge company probably the third biggest shipping company in the world. And no surprise that during COVID, in the last financial year, made about $24 billion profit. Now, our industry in Australia kept everything going. We were sort of deemed essential. We didn't stop. So that was the seafarers and the wharfies. But at all this time, we had been in negotiations for a national agreement with Svitzer around all ports and all branches. And it was 2 years ago, I did attend one of their early in the piece, but it was late in negotiations. And we were only about 2 weeks away from signing an EBA. It was very, very close. So you could, at that time, it was more or less just the drafting tidying up. Well, out of the blue, out of nowhere, they decided to introduce 30 new claims, just pulled apart everything that we'd achieved in the previous 2 years, 30 new claims, and most of them, after we read them, made no sense. And when we asked them to articulate all these claims, the bosses in Melbourne, around the country, couldn't explain them either. So obviously this was something that was come out of it was an international attack on us, and subsequently, most recently, so 2 years later, we're getting closer. But in the meantime, they've approached the government, they've used Fair Work, they've used a loophole in the Fair Work Act that to remove an EBA that's usually designed for non-operative EBAs. But they found a loophole, applied to Fair Work to rip up the current agreement. Now, that's an agreement that they've had since agreement started in the 90s. And believe me, I'm most aware of what our blokes down in Port of Melbourne do. Very flexible, good arrangements, good workers, and decent pay, of course. To rip up that agreement means it's back to the award, and everything that's attached to the award that's not in the EBA's gone. So, diabolical, and it just couldn't be sustained. And that's still pending, that's still hanging in there. They tell me they're still negotiating, but it's a horrible thing to have hanging over those blokes, particularly when they've worked so hard through negotiations to get where they are. So we, going forward, getting the Morrison government out, we totally expected it, and we had Bill Shorten attend our monthly meeting the other day, and he reiterated the commitment from the Labor government that he would fix these issues in the Fair Work, fix the Registered Organisation Act, all that sort of stuff. So that would mean these loopholes that would tear up agreements. So we're looking forward to that. With all the hard work from all of us, we can get them in there. Stephen Oring, I think I mentioned 2 years ago the issues we had with DP World, that was finally resolved. But coming out of that, we had the Patrick's dispute, another company that applied to Fair Work to tear up their agreement. Now, thank goodness at the 11th hour, I think it was a Friday night, where they withdrew it, and because they were due in Fair Work on the Monday. So that would have been diabolical too, because going back to the award meant there was no more rosters. They were back to lesser hourly rate. And in that, people saying, well, oh, look, they're possibly, there's overtime was optional. But the biggest fear was it gave the ability to the company to employ casuals. So just because you were a permanent employee meant nothing. They could do what they liked. So thank goodness at the last minute, we were able to get an agreement up there. So that was a godsend, that happening for those blokes 2 years later. But we've still got these big businesses like DP World, Cube, they're still attacking us. You may have heard a couple of months ago the Cube wharfies in Fremantle taking protected action. They're locked out for 11 weeks, they're on the grass. They finally got back in. It's not long after that, going back in the gate. The company made an application to the ABCC, which, as you know, is the government body that investigates the construction workers. And in that, they used that part where they say if you're holding up business, holding up manufacturing, the supply chain, that's an offence. So the MUI said, well, hang on, this isn't to do with us. And they said, well, no, it is, because in that illegal dispute, what we call an illegal dispute, we said, no, it's protected action, you locked us out. They said, because we weren't delivering steel and timber off the ship, you interrupted the supply chain. So believe that, they'll try anything. So we need to fix that. So that's ongoing. There are other issues like in 2020, DP World protected action. They've got the in Sydney, all legal, and it really wasn't made an impact, but they were able to, DP World at a national level, had the ear of the Morrison government, and subsequently from that, got them back to work because the threat was that they were the government was going to take the MUA to court for impacting the Australian economy. And actually went on TV public and said there was 40 ships lined up in Botany Bay. I mean, anyone could have looked out up any of those tall towers and saw only about four of them out there. It was ridiculous. But that's what we're up against. The fight, I mean, I used to say struggle a lot. I think it's a fight. It's really a fight. We struggle to get out of bed from time to time. But what we're doing here is a fight. It's absolute fight. My concern is if we don't get Albanese up, Morrison's had his feet under the desk for this last term. He knows what he wants to do. He's got comfortable. He knows the fights he's going to have. He's going to start implementing everything the next term round. We saw that with Howard and company over the course of time. We can't let this happen because they're getting stronger, they're getting smarter, they're getting big business, international business support from them. What can I say? It's imperative that we get rid of the Morrison government. Thank you. Thank you. No problem.